Okay, we ready?
Yep, all right. We're good to go.
And we're back. This is Frank Keller Rich.
This is Nick Plummer.
And our guest today is Jeff Marins. You're the president of the League of Inebriated Gentlemen and also a lawyer.
Correct.
And this is the Modern Drunken Podcast.
Oh, yeah. We started in a little early.
Yeah. We're in Cherry Sound Studios, as usual.
In the heart of Capitol Hill.
You're the president.
Founder and president of the League of Inebriated Gentlemen. It started in 2005. Some buddies and I decided that, you wanted to get your smoking jacket out. So we got velvet smoking jackets and decided to get some pipes.
Gotta have pipes, definitely.
And we, of course, we have the Modern Ladies Auxiliary. It's our sister organization.
Nice.
For the ladies. White gloves are required for that.
Excellent.
The gentlemen have the smoking jackets. The ladies have the white gloves. And we go out and enjoy a beverage or two.
Yeah, and you also have a fun run, don't you?
That's right. Well, once a year, we do the 0.05K stumble to prevent sobriety.
So not so much a run.
Okay, I like that.
The 0.05K stumble.
Wow, whole half a K, huh?
Stamp out the temperance and moderation. Get rid of it.
So does it start at a bar, end at a bar? Is that the...
Usually the same bar.
Okay, so you just walk around the bar for a...
Right, well, I think the parking lot to the bar is probably the 0.05K.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha.
So you're covered there. We do sometimes we went to the Shady Dell in Bisbee. We rented out the whole Shady Dell in Bisbee. The trailer park, it's great.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, about 5 years ago we
did one
there.
I always wanted to stay there, but I guess they have a thing against kids.
That's correct. Kids are not allowed.
You have kids now. My treacherous wife started having kids. I'm kidding. No, I love my kids.
So what exactly is it?
Vintage trailers, Airstreams, that sort of thing. And there's a dry docked yacht. One's a tiki bus.
Yeah, each one is themed, right?
Yeah, you're right.
One's like Elvis, one's a tiki bus. So it sounds like
And there's like 8 or 9 or 10 of them, and we got the whole park, and every trailer had to have its own special drink. And so you'd just go to each trailer, and everybody had a themed drink, and just get shit-faced. And I guess Doug Stanhope lives down in Bisbee.
He does.
Yeah.
It's a strange little town, isn't it?
It's off the beaten path.
It's like an art town of some sort, right?
It's, the hippies artists. Took over after the mine collapsed, the mining industry collapsed.
Yeah.
We're going to try and do one at the Sip and Dip in Montana.
No, I've heard about this place. From you.
Right. I've learned about it. It's sort of tiki, but the pool is attached to the bar, so it's underwater, and you can see into the bottom of the pool, and they have women dressed in mermaid outfits that swim, and you get shit-faced.
Where's this in Montana?
Great Plains, I think.
Okay.
How strange. And it's been there for quite a while.
Long time, yeah.
Yeah. Definitely sounds like a...
Road trip.
All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of road trips, let's go right off topic really quickly here. We're all Hunter Thompson fans, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
And did you hear that they're going to turn Woody Creek, Owl Farm and Woody Creek into a museum?
I saw that, yes.
I always knew they would. I was always waiting for the other shoe to drop, because what else can they do with it? She says some of the rooms haven't been touched at all, like his workroom, all his papers, and all his crazy stuff.
Well, are they going to have a shooting range there? Because I think that would be perfect.
That would
be the Hunter S. Thompson Museum
perfect.
And shooting range. You know,
right. Get
a, and maybe have his car used to shoot at and just... pull that out and you can take pot shots at his car.
Yeah, we're going to be the first guys in line when that goes down.
Yeah.
We'll have to definitely do a road trip.
Well, didn't you? You went to Ketchum, right? To pass out on Hemingway's grave?
We got drunk on his grave, indeed. I've done that with Kerouac's grave as well in Lowell, Massachusetts. It's kind of a thing, though. You go there, you get drunk, and you're kind of like 6 feet of packed earth away from your hero. It's just kind of a weird feeling, you know?
Yeah, I went out to Fort Morgan to Philip K. Dick's grave, but we got really drunk instead. And
where's Fort Morgan?
I'd say it's out on the plains. It's about
Colorado.
Yeah, it's about 2 hours. Like him and his twin sister were born out there, and his twin sister died in childbirth, so she's buried out there. So he wanted to be buried next to her.
Hmm.
But yeah, we went out there, and it was a thunderstorm, and so we just sat at a bar called the Queen's Inn, which is a fun little bar that used to be a brothel.
This one has all the toilet seats on the wall, right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So we just went and got drunk there instead. And
most bars we probably wouldn't do that because it would kind of.
Well, they use the toilet seats to frame pictures.
Ah.
So.
That would be generally considered an insult, wouldn't it?
Quite possibly.
Who's in the pictures?
I can't remember.
Probably local regulars.
Yeah, probably.
Well, what other destination bars are you guys looking into?
As far as a road trip?
Yeah.
Well, definitely Woody Creek Tavern. What's the bar with all the animal heads on the wall? You should have went there.
Oh, yeah, the...
Buckhorn Exchange,
yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of famous.
It's the oldest liquor license in Denver.
It's one of the claimants of that title. Yeah. There's several other bars that say the same thing. But it's been open since the 1800s. You never have seen so many square feet of animal heads and guns and stuff on the wall. It's really kind of rustic. They make some interesting drinks
there. They serve wild
game. Yeah, they make the Buffalo Bill cocktail, which is whiskey and apple juice, which is quite tasty.
Actually, yeah, it was pretty good. I remember having it there when
bartenders are certainly as you would expect. So what are we drinking here?
We're drinking Gin Rickey's.
It is, of course, always guest choice what we're going to drink. And
I thought it's summer. You guys are in heat wave. It's still 20 degrees cooler than Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah.
95 here. 115 in Phoenix.
Yeah, I'm not really a gin fan, but these are pretty good.
Actually. It's clean and refreshing.
It's refreshing.
Yeah.
Takes the edge off.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make me feel like killing so much anymore.
So, in general, are you a gin fan?
Yeah, gin is my tipple of choice.
And your Bootles is your...
Bootles, 209 is my martini gin, if you want to get to the stuff that's $30 or more. But for the under $30, Bootles would be my gin.
It's under $30?
Bootles, yeah, about 24, 25.
Huh.
We drink a Tanqueray right now because the liquor store.
What the hell? We don't rate Bootles?
But it turns out the liquor store that I wandered into, Gentleman Jim's or something, that this was the top shelf the Tanqueray was. It was that or Gordon's or Calvert.
I used to be a Tanqueray guy, and I like Beefeater.
Beefeater's a great gin.
The Jackalope gin I actually like a lot from Peach Street.
Yeah. All they do is make quality products over there.
Yeah. Have you had the Peach Street?
I've not.
It's out of what, Palisade? Is that a Palisade?
Palisade, yeah. Yeah, they make a whiskey, they make a gin, a vodka.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they actually distribute outside the state or not.
I don't think I've seen it in Arizona.
They do. I'm not sure which states, though.
Yeah. Well, you guys have a burgeoning liquor industry here.
Distilling is the new microbrewery thing. I mean, it's they're all over the place. My next-door neighbor's opening a distillery on Broadway. A lot of my friends are opening up distilleries. It's really...
What do you think the entry-level cost of that is?
Wow. Well, I know one of my friends.
Yeah, what's the outlay for
$1 million?
Really? Yeah. Okay.
But they did everything. It's like a freaking a James Bond villain control center. It's got computer stuff everywhere, and there's buttons and lights and switches.
You also have to realize that if you're just doing straight whiskey, then you also have a 3 to 5 year period of no income coming in.
Right,
good
age.
Right. That's why usually they start with vodka.
Yeah, usually people start with vodka, but Laws Whiskey didn't do that. They just
Laws decided they were gonna make whiskey and they invested the
Stranahan's, same as Stranahan's. Yep. They just waited till the whiskey came out.
Yeah, which I respect. One of the booze news I want to get into. I read a recent article and it's talking about how now there's moonshine on the shelves everywhere. It's called white. They're calling it white whiskey.
It's just unaged whiskey,
which is moonshine essentially. So it's a little lower proof.
Spirit Dog actually has a pretty good one.
Yeah, go to the liquor store. It's all over the place. So people are wondering if the ancient art's going to start dying out. The people are actually making out in the hollers and stuff are going to stop doing that and get jobs in the distillation industry.
I doubt that highly because it's not a matter of them going, well, you can buy it in the stores. It's a matter of you can buy it cheaper off a.
Right. Before you couldn't buy it in the stores, but now if you're like a, kind of a entry level or even experienced moonshine drinker, you can say, "Well, I might as well just go down to the store instead of going out there to the holler."
I don't think that's the point, though. The point is that it's way cheaper to go and buy it. I mean, I don't think that moonshine aficionados are out there to get having sip taste with a spit bucket. I think they're going out there for best bang for your buck.
Yeah. So although some of that moonshine is just made with sugar and it's just really bad. So your other job when you're not being an inebriated gentleman is you're out there you're defending drunk drivers and.
Yep, but no, I do mostly vehicular stuff.
Okay, yeah. So what is the state of DUI laws in the country?
Well, Arizona has the most draconian laws, but you guys have one thing we don't, which is insane. You can get a DUI on a bicycle in Colorado.
Yeah, or on a horse.
Oh, that is. Yeah, it has to be a motor vehicle.
Maybe the horse is sober.
I think maybe even a skateboard.
Yeah,
like who are you going to hurt on a bicycle? I asked Frank, who are you going to hurt on a bicycle
if you
happen to ride it into a brick wall while driving?
It was not brick, it was cement.
Cement. Sorry. Semantics, yes. So, yeah, I think that is ridiculous because the whole point of drunk driving laws, they say, is to protect the innocent, and I don't think you're going to mow anyone down on your bicycle or your skateboard.
A lot of things, but we're not innocent.
No, we know exactly what we're doing when we get on that bicycle and crash into a wall.
We flash a $20 bill at the bartender. We know what we're getting into. And we know we're going to have to get home at some point.
0.08 laws are so arbitrary. It's
Now they're ready for point. Now Mad wants 0.08. When they got 0.08, they're like, okay, it's as far as we're going to go. I know it even seems a little crazy. But now they're like, you know what? Maybe 0.05 would be even better.
Well, I remember when we had
a glass of wine.
The interview on Countdown with Keith Olbermann. And, we mentioned that MAD is a neo-prohibitionist
organization. Oh, yeah, it's a teetotal organization.
And they went and asked the local representative in Denver, and he's like, no, we are not a prohibitionist organization. And then his next words out of his mouth were, but we think it's best if no one ever drinks.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I'm sorry, that is a prohibition attitude.
Yeah, no, and even the founder of Candy Leitner, the founder of MAD, says they're a teetotaler.
No, she's abandoned the organization.
Yeah, well, no, she says they're neo-prohibitionists. She says that they're trying to get rid of alcohol entirely. They're not, they're no longer, because it's like a shark. Once it starts swimming, it got to keep moving forward. If it stops swimming, moving forward, it dies. So it's got to keep going. It keeps getting what it wants.
And everybody in charge is men.
Yeah, I know.
Make a lot of money.
Majority of the board of directors are men.
Okay, well, that brings me to a bit of booze news. The U.S. National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
NHTSA.
Yeah, NHTSA is working with a consortium of car makers, including Ford, GM, and Volkswagen, to develop an alcohol detection system for vehicles that will prevent those over the limit from driving. So this is basically having that magic whistle that you blow to make your car.
Who's going to buy that car?
Well, the thing that gets me is that it's a passive system detecting alcohol levels as the driver breathes normally, press the button, or hold the wheel. So, okay, so it's detecting alcohol in the air. So you have a buddy, and you're sober, you're driving your wasted buddy home, who's just exuding alcohol, and then you can't start your car.
Or you just drink some cough medicine. And you got to get to the hospital really fast because your wife's about to give birth to a child, and you got a heavy cough, so you unthinkingly drink some cough medicine, and you're stuck.
Then the wife's having the baby at home. Yep.
Yeah. Or maybe she's got her leg cut off and she's about to die.
It's a crying shame.
It is a crying shame. There's lawsuits are going to come out of that. And who's going to buy that car? I can see some people buying the car if they don't want, like, some wife buying it because they want her husband to drink, you know.
Or it could be they're going to put it in every car.
No, yeah, they want to mandate it. Yeah, yeah, so you have to have it in there. But of course, remember they did the whole seatbelt thing? People just found ways around it.
Yeah.
Jury rigged. There'll be 20,000 YouTube videos on how to do it.
Pause it to drink up.
No,
we
can drink and talk at the same time. You know, at the same time.
We've got a little Appleton estate rum here, and I like that with
you sticking with gin, Frank?
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with gin now. We'll do some
cool rum and soda with for me, it's rum and soda with lime.
It's a winner.
What do you call that?
I don't know.
Next.
Rum Ricky?
Yeah, Rum Ricky.
Rum Ricky. I'm sure that's actually what it's called in a book somewhere. And where did you get that news? Didn't you get the news from that awesome new drinking news website called
BrutalHammer.com?
It is. It's the extension of Modern Drunkard. Of course, the name is, the staff drink is a Brutal Hammer, which is half vodka, half red wine.
I wouldn't call that.
Do you do that warm?
You're supposed to. You can cynically throw in a couple ice cubes.
I wouldn't call that the staff drink. I'd call that, like, more the staff punishment drink.
I like them every now and then. They kind of, they free the mind.
Yeah, they kind of kick you in the teeth, I think. You know, I mean, that's one hell of a hangover, is that cheap red wine and vodka hangover. It's a good match. It's one of those waking up desiccated and wanting to kill yourself kind of things. So.
Yeah, but you know what? You could.
Just fascinating. The memory of it's just pausing.
Yeah. But you know, I think hangovers make us a stronger breed of character. I mean, in fact, this is a true story. A friend of ours, who I promise not to say his name, is cancer. It's treatable, so he's getting chemo, and he was talking to the doctor about it, and the doctor was telling him, he was asking about his drinking habits, he's like, yeah, I drink a lot in the past. He's like, well, it's funny you say that, because heavy drinkers tend to suffer less of the effects of chemotherapy because they're used to hangovers, they're used to this sort of feeling.
Ah.
And people who don't drink at all are like, oh my God, this is all new, why is this terrible feeling? When your average guy is, you know, hungover three times a week, it's like, oh yeah.
Basically, with chemo, you go, okay, I need a real greasy breakfast burrito and a beer.
Right, no, it's a familiar feeling.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, I've been through this kind of hangover before. It feels like an incredible hangover. So, there you go. We're actually training for our future cancer.
Well, that's nice and bright.
Hey, we're all gonna die.
I don't plan on living that long.
Yeah, I used to say that too. Then
you've got kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I'll be dead before I'm 40. Then it's 50, then it's 90.
Well, and as you know, the reason I met Frank was because I sent a gift subscription of Modern Drunkard magazine to the Vehicular Crimes Unit of the County Attorney's Office with a note saying your magazines are out of date. Here's a gift subscription to Modern Drunkard on
me. I bet they were thrilled.
How did that go over? Did that go over well?
They took me up on charges, and I went all the way to the wire, and I fought them, and I won by the, can you fucking believe it, 5-4 virtue of, I guess 5 people thought my sense of humor was okay.
Yeah,
come on. The state bar wants your sense of humor to be limited to knock-knock jokes and Bazooka Joe comics, like you're... 10-year-old with Down syndrome.
What
or something.
The? You know what's weird though? Looking at a subscription database, we send a lot of issues to law offices. So you say the legal community are heavier drinkers than average?
I would expect, yeah.
I think so too. I think because all the guilt you guys must bear of letting these child molesters go, you must have to drink.
you mean the presumed innocent people?
I would. God, if I was letting those murderers and child molesters off, I'd have to. I'm not sure why I'm blacking out every night now. I must be
serial urinists.
Yeah, kind of those are the worst.
Oh, good times.
Okay, so you beat the state bar on that.
I won that one. I've lost others.
What happens when you lose something like that?
Oh, they'll yank your license.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess
suspended,
they
suspended. You can get reprimanded. All sorts of stuff.
I guess they consider it a privilege to have a
correct. Your First Amendment rights are truncated when you are a lawyer. You are not free to be. Yourself, basically.
You think that's fair?
Oh, God, no. No. There's something fundamentally wrong with people thinking that they have a right not to be offended.
Yeah, and
that seems to be the trend these days.
A growing trend. It is. It's like,
like the college student who wanted them to remove Sandman from the curriculum on an English class because they were offended by the content.
The comic?
Yeah, well, yeah. What are the phraseology now? The trigger warnings and microaggressions, you know, it's like, when did all the college kids become such pussies? I mean, usually you'd go to college, you'd get your drinking on, you'd kind of learn how to drink
a little bit. College is also supposed to be a place where it challenges your
new ideas, conflicting theories,
and it makes you actually critically think. Now, if they take away everything that might make you uncomfortable, then you aren't going to learn how to critically think, and you're not going to how to form your own opinions. You're just going to be, well, you know, it's like they've just taken high school and moved it up to college level where they're just creating robots.
And in the same aspect, they're also banning hard alcohol from a lot of campuses now.
Really?
What's better for critical thinking than hard alcohol?
Nothing.
That's my memory. They used to sit around and drink alcohol and have these bullshit sessions, and, you know, discuss ideas. And nowadays, it's like, oh, trigger warning, you just gave me a microaggression. You don't have the right to be not offended. That's part of life. You're going to be offended. Like, you can't just go around like a little soft little bubble world like, oh, don't offend me. My feelings are so precious. It's good for you to be offended. That's why I go to bars, you know.
That's what a free society is.
It should.
It's pretty easy to get offended at, you know.
If you're easily offended, yeah.
No, but it's usually the smell of the bathroom you're going to find, you know.
You're going to get a thicker skin. Yeah. That's why I always said drunks are better class of people because they're less easily offended. They're tougher because they have to deal with all these hangovers and stuff. And, you know, and they're if somebody, like, you know, smokes near them, they're not going to get all freaked out. Oh, my God, you're invading my space. So drunk's kind of like, you know, more give and take.
Yeah, I found that an interesting trend. The patio, the non-smoking patio has shown up in Denver a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've seen several places where, I think it's called Hilo Brewery or something down on Lincoln and Broadway. They have a big patio that you can't smoke on. I mean, I don't smoke, but, you know, it's outdoors. And I don't see.
Business owners should be able to do that if they want.
I agree. I'm pro business. You can do what you want, but and I'm sure they're going to suffer for that.
Yeah, let the market sort it out. And
yeah,
but well, that was the original idea with smoking bars.
Right. I mean,
oh well,
because everybody's like, oh, I was like, well, there are non-smoking bars in Denver. They always end up failing rather really quickly. But I mean, if you don't, you can go to one of those. You don't have to go to a bar where, you know, there's smoking in there. It should be the right of the business owner to say.
You know, but, honestly, as a non-smoker, I mean, I didn't like the idea of it. I was against the idea of it, but I definitely find it weird when I go to places where you can smoke inside now.
You can smell urine. The tobacco smoke used to hide all the smell of urine.
No, but I mean, going to another state where it's still legal, they're getting smaller and smaller. I find it really, it's strange.
You consider it a microaggression or a trigger warning?
Both, actually. Both, actually.
Got a lot of rage.
A lot of rage, man. But this is actually another good segue into another piece of booze news. I'm talking about this Mallorcan resort called Magaluf.
I've heard about this.
And it's mostly Brits go there, and it's really known as just like New Orleans times 10, like drinking in the streets and
basically people having a good time.
And basically, the local authorities have introduced pretty much draconian fines. It's drinking on the street has been banned between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. and there's fines between
that's prime time.
750 pounds and 3,000 pounds for anyone caught urinating in public, flashing, or swimming naked. So wow. Basically, this place was kind of like Mardi Gras all the time.
I've saw pictures. They're out of control.
And they're trying to get rid of it and tone it down, but it does not seem to be working at all.
Yeah, because people are still doing it anyway. Ignoring it. Yeah, and then the cops apparently have been told not to be heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Eventually, they could be, and they'll probably put an end to all this, but until then, there's nothing like there's nobody like a drunk person who was willing to, you know, rebel against authority. That's probably why our founding fathers are almost all drunk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they tried the same thing in New Orleans a couple of years ago to ban flashing for beads and that kind of stuff, and that didn't.
Really?
That didn't work.
Show me your tits. Seriously, how can they get rid of that?
They mentioned that they were going to try to stop it, and I was wondering how they were going to. Would there just be like a guy, you know, on every
writing
five
tickets,
feet,
running around, writing
tickets, going boobies, boob ticket, boobie. I mean, you know, probably the New Orleans Police Department would be fighting over that position because then you could just get to walk around and look at people's tits. But
I'm sure they do that anyway.
Yeah, true. Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be. I mean, I know it's about the, you know, maybe offends children, but, you know, if you're taking your kid to Mardi Gras, already screwing up as a parent.
Anyway. Yeah, it's not a family friendly kind of place.
Exactly. I mean, it's like you don't take your kids to a bar at midnight. You know, there are certain places where there should be some adult fun, which includes sometimes flashing your breasts.
Fair enough. I mean, when I was at Mardi Gras one year,
never offended me when I.
You know, I was at Mardi Gras one year and I overheard these two women complaining about how sexist Mardi Gras was because. I was like, show your tits. And I'm like, no guy's going to show their dick. I'm like, I will. And so,
did you show them?
And they went,
that is a bet they will lose.
And they said, whip it out. And I did. And I got, and they're like, oh, yeah, I'll take those beads. Thank you. And I just walked on. I'm like, there you go.
I
mean,
I guess you showed the who's sexist.
Yes. I guess by whipping out my penis.
That would have been sexist.
Yeah, I just whipped it out and then got my beads. And,
you showed them. Good for you, sir. Mm-hmm. Show my sexism is.
And that's Mardi Gras for you.
In my wallet, as a good luck charm that I carry around, is when Jackie Gleason was the Grand Master of the parade, he was throwing out, well, I'm sure a lot of people are throwing them out, these little coins with his face on them, slashing them out to the crowd. And I got one on eBay for like $5.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was there. It was Tom Arnold.
He might have touched it.
It's less awesome. It
was Tom Arnold. Jackie Gleason, Tom Arnold.
And they had him on the news talking to some kid in the hospital. You know, like doing some public service, and he just looked like horribly wrecked. Like, he was like the worst hangover, you know, it's just like bloodshot, saggy looking, exhausted.
Yeah, you know, he's like, not the best the actor, grand, but he seems the, very human to me.
Yeah, he's like, here's the Grand Marshal for Mardi Gras.
No, he's
like,
got some appetites, it seems
like.
Yeah.
No, he seems like less pretentious than your average Hollywood actor who's like, you know, trying to maintain this thing of like, oh, I never drink. And then.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't.
Yeah. It's like nowadays, you know, they get caught, they go to rehab, and then they're. Oh, I'm sorry.
Justin Bieber.
He's not our poster boy that we're looking for. I'm sure some of our better actors, you know, drink plenty. They just
didn't Johnny Depp show up at an award show hammered?
Yeah, he drinks quite a bit.
Good for
him. Yeah, and he's a good actor.
Yeah, he did a great Hunter S. Thompson.
He did, but you know what pissed me off about it? If you, I see it on the internet, there'll be these college kids getting. Hunter S. Thompson tattoos, but it's Johnny Depp's face on the tattoo.
Yeah,
I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, man? I've
never seen that movie because my view is they said the book couldn't be made into a movie. They were right.
Well, no, you know, they almost made it with Jack Nicholson back in the 70s. That might have been.
No, I saw the movie twice in the theaters, and it was only in the theaters for about 2 weeks. And I thought Terry Gilliam did a brilliant job. If anyone,
and I love Terry Gilliam, but I've never seen that movie.
It is. I think he does a brilliant job. I mean, there's a couple. He takes a couple liberties.
He does,
but. In general, I think, you know, it has the same flow as the movie where there's kind of this low spot in between the two hotels and the madness. And I think
Johnny Depp, you know, he equips himself well. I think, of course, he's exaggerating the character.
I think Benicio del Toro did a great job, too.
You know? Yeah, I wasn't so much enamored with his portrayal.
Well, I remember going and seeing it.
Maybe because when I read the book, I had a vision in my mind what that guy looked like.
I remember seeing it in the theaters, and the first time I did, there was this family of five comes in and sits down. I'm like, what the fuck are they doing here watching this movie?
It has cartoons.
And you know, and I just remember, and then I'm thinking, like, okay, if you didn't know who Hunter S. Thompson was, and you saw the ads, it looked like a fun lark.
Yeah, sure.
And then right where the cocaine flies out of the you know, and they're driving down the highway. It's like, look what God did. They all
get that was up. A God. You're a Marco agent.
Yeah, the whole family just gets up and walks out. Like, wow, that's like 4 minutes into the movie.
Good for you know? Dad. I probably wouldn't have made that decision. I should have. Although I've named my son after Hunter.
Yeah, Thompson. Hunter.
Yeah. Hunter Hemingway.
Two suicides.
I'm sure that's not going to warp his mind. I think it's going to fit him perfectly. By his behavior, I think he's going to be a Hunter S. Thompson style character. He's a freaking wild kid.
Yes, he is.
There's a bottle of whiskey waiting for him when he turns, I don't know, 17 maybe.
Stranahan's?
Stranahan's. Is that when you started?
Oh, no, I started much earlier than that.
I was not drunk before 17.
I was 15.
Yeah.
I was about 15
first time I got hammered.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Well, I got drunk like on a tall can of Coors when I was like, you know, 7 or 8. That was, you know, it doesn't take much to get drunk when you're like 60 pounds.
Well, I drank wine with like every meal. It's like,
oh, really?
Yeah, it was normal in my family.
And now that's why you treat alcohol with such respect, because that's right. you're raised like a
European. Well, I can remember that my biological father had a bottle of wild turkey out on the counter. I'm probably 12, 13 years old. I'm like, what's that taste like? I'm like, try that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I took a swig at it, and I'm like, it's not very good. And it stared at me like, you just choked that back straight face.
No, I remember my first hard liquor. I was like, wow, that's like some kind of poison. I mean, it's powerful. I learned to mix it with stuff, and then I was like, this is really good.
Yeah, I didn't like beer when I was.
I still don't drink beer.
I mean, I love beer.
Really?
No beer.
I'm a big beer fan.
You learn to drink it in high school, right? I mean, everybody hates beer to begin with. Do you know anybody who liked beer the first time you tried it?
Really? When I was 7 years old, I thought it was great, apparently. I chugged the can, and me and my brother beat each other up. My dad was laughing.
I never got the taste for it. I drank tequila. I'd bring everybody to go to the parties, and there's kegs, and I'd want that, and I'd bring tequila, because you just...
So you were the cool guy.
Yeah, I got...
Well, obviously.
First time I got drunk was on Inglenook with Tang powder as a chaser.
Nice.
Yeah.
What?
On Flagstaff.
What do you mean a chaser?
Well, we do a shot of warm Inglenook that someone had stolen at their parents' place. Yeah.
Doing like, shots of wine.
White, not even fortified wine.
Yeah. White Inglenook in a gallon glass.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So we do a hit of that and then just take some Tang powder and like... Just lick it.
Oh, yeah, you got to chase that Inglenook, man.
Well, that's warm Inglenook is something pretty horrendous, you know.
Oh, come on. Well, when you're kids. You
yeah, mean, when you're 15, you know.
You just have no concept of what the rules
are. Then I came home and threw up, and my parents were like, are you drunk? I'm like, sure am. They're like, why? I'm like, because I wanted to. And then I had to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and go work at EcoCycle, which
sounds
is
like you had cool parents.
Yeah, my parents are really cool.
My dad was actually, because when I grew up, my dad was drinking all the time. He was a cab driver in Vegas and Reno. He would just come home and drive a cab drunk. And so I got, you know, used to seeing it. And but I didn't really get started. He kept a really strong discipline about the house. So I didn't really get many opportunities to drink until I was probably in the Army. And also because I was a total library geek in college. So there was...
I
wasn't invited to any keggers or anything. I had to stay at home.
My mom made wine, and she made this rhubarb wine that was horrible.
Oh, boy.
And threw it out, and of course, I just looked around and then grabbed it out of the trash and brought it to a party, and then threw up a lot, because it was not good. That was,
How did the kids like
rhubarb
that?
Rhubarb wine, you say?
I remember sitting right outside the party, right outside the door, and just puking away. And,
you know, I want to try almost every single liquor out there, but I think that's one something I would not actually skip.
I would not recommend the Oh, the fermented mare?
Mare's milk. Is that Mongolia?
Yeah, it's Mongolia.
I'd try that.
I'd try it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Genghis Khan kicked so much ass. Get his boys loaded on fucking some mare milk and sweep down on the village. Why not?
There you go.
Yeah. Get the drink together.
We could do the same. There you go.
Well, so is there anything you don't prefer gin, you said?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of gin.
Don't tell that story because you told it so many times in this podcast before.
Yeah, I won't tell.
I don't drink scotch.
Oh,
really?
I don't like scotch.
Well, I mean,
talking about blended scotch? You're talking about single
malt?
Any kind of scotch.
I mean, I can drink it. I mean, I can Indian wrestle down my throat, of course, but I don't like the taste of scotch.
Huh.
I'm a rye and bourbon guy.
Yeah, I like Highland stuff. I'm not a big fan of the super peaty stuff.
But it's nice to try every now and then. You know, it's not something you would drink a whole bottle of.
I mean, I like tequila, but
what's that?
It doesn't like
blood and
me.
Sand, the cocktail? The scotch cocktail, it's good.
So a few of those.
Right, you got the Rob Roy.
Is it a single malt?
Is Rusty no fucking Nail
Scotch? Rusty Nail, that's Drambuie and Scotch.
Yeah, but these are not single malt Scotches.
They're blends.
Yeah, those are blends.
Yeah.
Husband Scotch.
It's hard to use a single malt because of that peatiness. It's hard to make anything go with it. I mean, it's pretty much a standalone
malts,
kind of thing.
Highland
it's like Mezcal.
Super.
Mezcal fights off almost.
Oh, yeah, that's rude. A tough
Mezcal
one.
Mezcal fights off mixers. It's absinthe. Generally
I've had it a couple
too,
times, and it's not something
it's readily available in Arizona.
That I would want to drink that much. You know?
I spent an entire summer trying to make a tiki absinthe cocktail. I just failed miserably.
Dr. Funk.
That has some, it does. That have some absinthe in it.
It's Pernod in it, yeah.
And then there's one that has an absinthe.
Actually,
wash,
I think I had that at Frankie's Tiki Bar.
Sazerac. Right? Sazerac, but yeah, that's not tiki. That's the New Orleans, which is one of my favorite drinks.
Yeah, it's actually.
Traditionally, Herb Saint is, well, I guess, absinthe.
Yeah, I'm not a
Herb Saint's good.
Really big fan of mixed whiskey cocktails. I usually find them all too sugary. But
not even, you don't like,
but I like
the
old fashioned? I like the Sazerac. Yeah, the old fashioned still muddled sugar. You know?
Yeah.
The Sazerac I like.
Sazerac is top notch. Peychaud's
and also, I'm not a, I like Peychaud bitter. I'm not a big fan of Angostura.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's the classic.
It tastes a little musty to me, you know? I just.
Is that a fact?
I'm not a big fan.
You know what the Hemingway Code Hero is, which we drank for many seasons back in the day? It's gin and tonic with bitters.
Yeah, you drank it.
Classic drink.
You and I got hammered at the Lancer on Hemingway. It's the first time I came in town.
Exactly. And I got the recipe from one of his books. I think it's Islands in the Stream, where he was, he had this more specific thing, big chunk of lime. He would wrap it in palm leaves and stand on the deck of his ship and, command the operation against the Nazi submarines. He was doing his patrols down in the Caribbean, which are apparently just big drunk cruises with Tommy guns shooting sharks and such.
Let's see if I got some more booze news here.
Why don't you just go to your phone and look at the brutalhammer.com website, which has all the booze news you'll ever want.
Seems a little too technical.
Did you guys see that article about how AA is bullshit? And it was a great article.
Oh, it was
in the Atlantic? It was in the Atlantic.
Yeah, they were talking. Yeah. They were talking about some.
Talking about 12-step programs in general, weren't they?
Well, and they were also talking about the nature of addiction and like a lot of the stuff that they based, not 12-step programs, but the anti-drug stuff and the alcohol stuff on was based off a study in the 70s. Where they took a rat, and it had the option of water and water with cocaine, and it would take the water with cocaine until it died.
Hmm.
And so they're saying, and that was like this. That's how they base a lot of their current addiction therapy on, is that you can't help yourself, and there's no control, and you're just going to do it.
It's like
they ran a different experiment recently where they took the rats.
That's bad luck.
Is that?
Yep. Don't screw with a knife.
It's supposed to give you, according to old Sicilian mythology, if you stir a drink with a knife, you'll have a stomachache later.
Okay, but so they did the experiment with the rats.
Just saying.
But they gave the rats like all these nice toys and stuff to play with and a really like rat heaven kind of place. And then they did the same thing. There's cocaine mixed water and there's water. And they found out that there's only like a very small percentage of the rats would even, they try it and then occasionally they try it, but they wouldn't, none of the rats died basically. None of the rats kept going back because their environment was, so they think, according to that study and what they're trying to do with the follow with behavioral psychology on that is that addiction is based not necessarily on you have no control. It's based on a lot of how your environment is.
Hmm.
And so if things get better, because we always drink a lot more when things suck.
If you're in a shitty, it's an
escape. Of course, I also drink when things are great to celebrate. But
exactly. But
it's a different way to look at it.
Right.
The disease theory of, the cottage industry of addictionology is just silly.
It is.
You know what's the disease? Cancer. You know what's not? Drinking too much.
Exactly. Yeah, I think as a comedian, that is a great joke on that.
Oh, is it Norm MacDonald?
Yeah, he's like, what a great disease, man, alcoholism.
It's the only disease where having it makes you feel better.
There's an entire South Park that's great about that, right?
Yeah. I've got cancer. Well, I've got alcohol.
There's so much charlatanism in the whole addiction industry anyway. It's all a bunch of charlatans and freaking witch doctors. And
well, with ADD, it's like they give the kids the Adderall. Like, well, I can't pay attention. Jesus. I can't do math. Where's my pill?
Yeah, exactly. half the kids now, or just I'm exaggerating, but you know, they by the time they're 17, they're getting used to taking a pill every day. I mean, it's like, did you need this before back in the old days? I mean, did every kid have to be on freaking some kind of drug to be? And they give them drugs for acting like kids. My kid is crazy. He acts like a crazy kid, but that's because he's a kid.
Yeah,
that's what kids do. Like, okay, I'm going to give you a pill to make you act like, I guess, an adult
robot.
Yeah,
we're back exactly. To the started. Preschool and make sure that they're on drugs and robotic. And by the time they get to college,
there's power of big pharma.
And by the time they get to college, you know, keep it the same way. And then you have nice drones to work at McDonald's. And
right. Conspiracy theory alert. Big pharma is, that's why big pharma is the biggest contributor to all these anti-drinking organizations.
Oh, yeah.
They always fund those.
Oh, sure. Makes sense.
Because, well, if they can get rid of alcohol, you're going to have to take their stupid pills. The problem with pills, though, they're not social. You don't go out to, hey, let's go out, hang out, and we'll all pop a pill together and stare at the wall.
Well, there's magistry and pageantry to alcohol.
Oh, my. And a rich history and tradition.
You can take your Prozac and sit at home and watch TV, or you can go to the bar and interact with people.
Yeah, you could. I mean, there's so many rituals. There's this toasting and stuff, and just the clink of the ice, so many gorgeous sounds about it. I mean, the taste, and you can actually taste it. I mean, who tastes a pill? And so, like, oh, this pill is rock, freaking awesome. Is that the ice clinking?
Yes, that's it. That's it. I hope Gus got that. You got that, Gus?
You need to put some more ice in
there. There we go.
Isn't that the most lovely sound, though, in the morning? You know, when I have hangovers, the ice hitting the glass. It's a lovely sound.
It is a lovely sound.
Maybe that qualifies me as an alcoholic.
Oh, I think. According to AA, I think anybody who has a drink ever is.
That's another thing we should talk about. They just changed the terminology on the whole addiction industry. Has changed the terminology. So we're not alcoholics anymore. What is the term now?
Drunks?
That's what I go with. Something disorderer.
Oh, right. I did see that.
Yeah, I got
alcoholic dysmorphic.
No, so we're not drunks, and
I think my drink is
okay. We're not alcoholics. We suffer from alcohol use disorder. That's the new terminology. The psychiatric union, or whoever the fuck is running.
I think
it.
I suffer from. I have the problem with alcohol.
So you're a disorderer.
No, alcoholic dysmorphism. That's my problem. Is that I always think they don't put enough booze in my drink.
Dysmorphism.
Yes.
It's like body dysmorphism, the people that
have
anorexics and
really except for it's with alcohol, because I don't think they make my drink big enough.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
You're one of those glass half empty kind of guys.
Glass not nearly enough full. It's more that way. Yes.
You know, technically it's always full because oxygen is actually full of element.
Oh, well. Let's get fucking pedantic here, Frank.
Yeah, so I think it's always weird with the American Psychiatric Union, where the fuck they
were. The people who thought homosexuality was a disease till the 70s.
Right. Well, they've actually said that being a nonconformist is a disease.
Exactly.
So, how dare you say that?
Yeah, I know. It's like, I think they're just trying to keep themselves in business. You know, it's like, let's make everybody's got something wrong with them, so if you're going to have to go to see a therapist.
You know, like lawyers trying to, you know. Making sure new laws are passed and that sort of thing.
Those are lawyers.
Which were mostly lawyers.
That's probably true, yeah. But what do people that love sausage and people love the law have in common? They both don't want to know how it's made.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, so essentially, almost all the problems of the world are, we can track down to big pharma and the lawyers.
Alcohol.
So, can you...
No.
I know you're not allowed to speak to us regular people.
Speak ill of the profession?
Yeah, well, I'm sure you go to secret meetings and stuff, and you know how to...
Yeah, there's a shibboleth that we go in.
Suppress the metric system and all the other things that you guys do. Like that Simpsons episode.
Yeah. Don't be a lawyer. To all the kids listening, don't be a lawyer.
So you regret going into the legal system?
You know this. I have a master's degree in philosophy. I was a philosophy professor before I was a lawyer.
You should have stuck with that, because there's a lot of philosophy jobs out there.
Just like anthropology.
Turns out I didn't like living in penury, so I got out of it. But, I wasn't smart enough to make a dent in philosophy, but I was plenty smart to be a lawyer, because it's easy.
What do you do with a philosophy degree, besides, like, maybe go sit on top of a mountain or something, and people come
teach,
to you and
teach
ask?
Philosophy. Teach.
Yeah. Exactly. Teach. That's probably exactly
right. Write really bad books.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Some of them are good. Just got to find the right ones.
Okay, I'm going to move the rum now because I think the gin's all gone.
No, it's still there.
I really, really am enjoying these gin rickeys.
They're
so refreshing and good, but I think I'm ready to go for a...
I'm going to try a couple of fingers of rum in a minute here.
Yeah.
Oh, so, by the way...
Appleton Estate. Apparently it's the...
I like it. I like it a lot. It's not too expensive. But
gin and rum together at last. You told me last night that you're crowdsourcing a bar?
Yeah, No, it's not too early to talk about this. Yeah, we're not going to use Indiegogo, but we're going to try and do the Modern Drunkard flagship bar with a Boozeum attached.
Are we going to have animatronic drugs?
That is the whole point of it.
Okay.
You know, there are alcohol-related museums in America right now. There's the Cocktail Museum in New Orleans, very good place. There's a couple beer museums, but there's not really a museum dedicated entirely to drinking in a positive sense of the way. I'm sure there's some temperance museums out there in Kansas or whatever the fuck. We're going to have like animatronic of the great drunkards like Hunter S. Thompson, Ernest Hemingway, Edgar Allan Poe, and they're going to be like, you know, I love alcohol. It's going to have their voices talking.
Are you going to have Bukowski taking a beer shit and then wiping his dick
It's not going to be crude like that. It's going to be family friendly.
It's going to be a small world except for drunks.
But of course, it's going to be a tiki bar because I'm a big tiki guy.
Tiki
adventure bar. So there's going to be a section for our adventure league and stuff, a meeting room. And next to it, we're going to have the Boozeum, which is going to celebrate all the great drinkers of history. And we're going to, let people contribute stuff on loan, like any regular museum, great drinking artifacts, whether it's, bottle that Elvis drank out of or whatever. It's gonna be fun. I mean, I think we can make this to the point where it's like, you know, where every solid drinker is gonna want to go to this place. It's gonna be like the Hard Rock for alcoholics.
All right.
Hard Rock alcoholics. Hard alcoholics.
Yeah, all those are horrible names.
Marketing's
not.
Yeah, Modern Drunkard Museum. How about that?
I like it.
Yeah, no, I think
Modern
it's gonna be
Drunkard
fun.
Boozy.
Yeah, and of course, it's going to be a proper tiki bar. And it's not going to be like a freaking tourist joint where they, you know, overcharge for fucking drinks. They're going to have freaking...
I'm confident.
$2
No, it is.
No, it could be. I think people can make a pilgrimage to see this place.
The Germans.
Yeah. The Germans and the French, perhaps. And I think people are... it's going to be a quality, production. But we're not going to go, like a Trader Vic's where you charge $15 for a freaking drink. It's going to be $2 PBRs. It's going to be freaking a classic dive bar prices. Because I hate going to places, especially tiki bars, like the one in town we have right now, where everything's
$15.
No, it's overpriced.
Yeah.
No, it's totally ridiculous. So we're going to have great tiki drinks.
Not even the Tonga Room in San Francisco, which is amazing.
I passed out there recently.
All right.
Yeah.
How are the prices there?
Smuggler's Cove, by the way.
They're about the same price as the one
Smuggler's Cove is.
I don't like, immediately screams to me, tourist destination, if they're overcharging for a drink.
Well, that place is kind of a tourist. I mean, they do have an
it
indoor
is,
lagoon.
But should they overcharge?
No, they've done it right. I mean, they do have, and the thing comes out, and they've got a band on it.
Why don't they charge less?
You don't know this story. We took a train trip, my girlfriend and I, up there.
Yeah.
And we went to L.A. to go to Jumbo's Clown Room and Moose on Frank's.
All right, before you go forward,
yeah.
How is the state of drinking on Amtrak, which is run by the government?
It is cowardly, is what the state is.
I expected as much because it's run by the freaking government.
But I will say this. So we had to go up to Flagstaff, took it over to L.A., but the Starlight Express, as they call it, has a special
good name.
Bar car from L.A. to San Francisco, and I think also
San Diego. Walk into it. What does it look like?
There's three sections. One of them in the front has white tablecloths. Nice. And then there's a little place with kind of the cocktail lounge area.
Okay.
And then there's a sitting area with swivel chairs so you can, view the scenery as it goes by.
And one bar.
And one bar with a very limited selection of booze. One of everything.
So how many bottles are we talking total?
10.
Oh, wow. That's very limited.
And they do have stemware. I'll give them that. So you're not drinking out of plastic glasses.
Oh, good, good.
And they don't let the coach passengers in.
Riff raff? Yeah, keep those bastards out.
So basically it was... My girlfriend and I were the only people trying to get our BAC to a Nick and Nora level.
Awesome.
And then there's a movie theater downstairs that has stairs.
What?
Which was playing something.
What do you mean a movie theater? How big is the screen?
Oh, it's a TV set.
Okay, there's a TV room downstairs.
Right. But you could get drunk. But you get drunk in your car. You bring all the booze you want into your car. And it's cheap. Because if you book ahead of time, a cab with a tiny bathroom and a bed is like, it was $250 to go from, and it's, that's for two people, by the way. To go from LA to San Francisco.
You get your own room?
You don't have to.
LA to San Francisco.
Yeah, it was like $250.
It's not bad.
And we get to San Francisco and we get drunk at Smuggler's Cove. Great bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, we go, we're flying back and I'm in the airport and they're like, sir, you're too drunk to let you board. Like, I was given to understand my ticket was to ride the plane, not to fly it. I've been so much more drunk in Vegas where they had to decant me into my seat and they had no problem with it. But no, they wouldn't let us. So we
just
had to
go to, you get.
Wow. Yeah, we had to go get a room. We had to go to a room and everything was sold out because it was graduation week. So I have all the families were in town. So we had to pay $1,000 to get a room. God. And it was the Bangkok suite. And of course I said, well, it comes with some Thai ladyboys, right? Which they found funny, not at all. You could have trouble to name it fucking Bangkok room.
Have
it better have
Bangkok?
Some Thai ladyboys.
Well, I remember taking trains. I've taken trains, you know, all from like Chicago to Denver and from New Orleans
really?
To Chicago and Denver to...
you got a sleeper car, right?
No, actually just as
no, he is one of those
coach
people.
But,
let me move my chair this way.
But for a long time, you could bring your own booze on.
No, you can. You can. Well, no, they'd be mixers for free.
See, maybe
be free
but
mixers?
Not...
If
not
you're in the sleeper
yeah,
car,
but not for
ha-dee-da.
I remember getting on one time, and they're like, because I do, I get a gallon of orange juice, and then drink a certain amount, and just pour vodka in there, and that would be my travel drink for a while.
Give a room, yeah.
Yeah, and...
is that how they drink them, coach?
And there was, yeah, pretty much.
I wouldn't know.
And there was, and there was one time where they actually said, you know, you can't bring your own alcohol on there.
They said that lots of places.
Yeah, and I still did, but I was like, really? Because, you know, what am I going to do? I can walk.
Yeah. It's train travel. I mean,
the drinks weren't outrageous. About $7 a drink, I think.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I mean, they're obviously
the glasses?
Regulation
tiny
pours.
Little glasses?
Regulation pours.
Oh, 2 ounce?
Yeah.
That's were they using the French little
thing? I don't recall they used a shot glass. I'll give them that.
I'm
and
sure
they did take a little extra effort for the Bloody Mary. They put the celery salt on the rim.
Just try over tipping and see if that would make an effect.
Oh, they were very good at responding to over tipping.
All right. Well, there you go.
Oh, there. Yeah, government workers generally are responsive to bribery. Because it's a government train, it essentially is bribery, isn't
right.
it?
Right. So enough about me. What do you think about me?
I think you're a fancy lad.
Thank you.
No, actually, I you're wearing golf pants.
And
these
Apollo.
Are fielding pants for cricket, goddammit. I don't play golf.
What the hell was I thinking?
Right.
The pattern's totally different. These are definitely fielding
pants. Golf is for losers. These are cricket pants.
No, but you look, actually, you have this look about you that's, you're kind of a sport. The old idea of being a sport, like in the 50s, okay, you know, like I'm a sporting chap. You drive like around MG around and stuff.
Okay.
No, it's a compliment I give you.
I'm not taking it as anything but.
No, because we usually have some rough characters in here.
What are you talking about? Shorts?
Oh,
no.
Not just
no.
shorts. And there's Luke and there's...
Well, I was in a Sears
everyone
suit when you saw me last night. It's not really...
But this is our second lawyer on here,
tumble.
Though.
You know, lawyers have a bad reputation about tipping.
Is that true?
They
must not, because I came up in the service industry. I was a bartender.
That's why you tip well.
Yeah, I worked at a gay bar for a while, and that was good times.
I'm sure.
Yeah, when I said, but if people, you know, I sucked a lot of dicks, but there was no love there.
All I gotta say is that gay bars have the strongest drinks and for great prices.
Is that true?
Yes, it is.
All right.
I did a whole article.
I know. What was it called?
Straight shots
in
a
gay
bar. Yeah. what was that? Seven gay bars in one night.
We need to. That's an old, really old article, and I need to put it back up on the. Actually, the other thing we should talk about is we're about to. The website's about to be a total redo. It's become much more fancy. We're gonna have a video section. We're gonna, you know, have some of our writers reading their stuff. If you prefer the audio thing, the website's but be about to totally change. Because we're kind of. I know some people like the retro style of it, but it's kind of 90s ish. And
because that's when you built it,
right? No, actually, yeah, it is.
So we're at, when do you think the rollout's going to happen with that?
With what?
The new website.
The new website.
Stuff you're talking about, Frank.
The store
is getting a little distracted here, people. The booze
there are so many things rolling out, though. There's the bar. There's the freaking the campaign for the bar.
Well, we didn't finish the bar. I'm actually interested in the bar thing.
Well, let's
trust me, it's going to be the most. You're going to walk in this bar because this is modern.
Oh, now we're in the
designing
bar.
That's my point. It is going to be the most. If you are a drinker and you walk in this place, you're going to be like fucking hell. It's going to be like walking. If you're like a if you're a Christian, you walk to go into Jerusalem and you go to the
Creationist Museum down in
whatever the hell, man. You're gonna walk in there. And it's like, this is where I belong. This is my homeland.
Ooh,
this
there's a caveman riding a dinosaur. That kind of feeling. I understand.
There will be no dinosaurs. Dinosaurs didn't drink.
I was talking about
a proven fact.
Yeah. Will there be drunk monkeys?
Smoking monkeys are awesome.
Wow, that's actually a great idea. It'd be
I have another story about drunk monkeys.
I say yes. Have the monkeys run around the rafters all the time, stealing drinks and stuff, and everybody's like, "Yeah, just the drunk monkeys."
And they'll eat someone's face. It'll be awesome.
Probably awesome. Place
free publicity.
Somebody.
Free
we'll make them sign a disclaimer before they walk in the door. And we'll actually put
if you get your face
by walking
off.
In this door, you are signing a disclaimer.
Well, I thought you wanted the monkeys to sign the disclaimer. Because that was
better. We will force
Well, you're a lawyer. Which one would be better?
Not a good one.
But they will be forced to do a scrawl on some kind of contract.
In feces.
Maybe a monkey print or something.
Yeah, in feces.
No,
that's what monkeys do.
I think.
By the way, why don't you guys come down to Phoenix? We got some good bars.
Yeah, why are you prejudiced against Phoenix?
Well, it is like 120 degrees.
Well, don't come June through September. But TT Roadhouse, one of the best bars in the country.
Is it?
Oh my God, TT Roadhouse is great.
Well, this is a good question. What makes a good bar great? I mean, there are
the customers.
The
customers.
That is the start, but just to get those
the
customers,
jukebox, the customers,
just to get those
the poor.
Customers, you have to have good
right.
staff,
good
and
staff,
a good environment. Because otherwise, those customers will not be there.
Agreed.
I mean, if you have a shitty bar, the good customers are not going to show up.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I hate internet jukeboxes. It's because it destroys the it destroys the fuel of the
I
bar.
Agree.
Like douchebags can come in and play you like 10. Like an hour of Nickelback and just change the whole feel of the bar.
It's totally
you know what
true.
I mean? And
although sometimes I like those places because I just need to hear
well, that,
an
you
air
like
supply
it,
song that just
you like when
reaches
you're a shitty bar and you can make it better for you. But you don't want to take the vibe of a good bar and make it
right.
fucking air supply.
Yeah.
I mean, like Lion's Lair still has the old school jukebox.
Exactly.
And
I mean,
that's why I love that.
And the same with Roadhouse. It's sister bar, more or less Shady's, has got a great jukebox. So got my home-based bars in Phoenix.
So you have two good bars in Phoenix.
No, there's more than that.
Sure there are.
We have.
How many bars do you think you've been to in Phoenix?
I don't know. How many are there?
You do tell me. I'm sure there's
about
500.
Oh, yeah. I've been to.
I'm always surprised.
I've been to everything that's a legitimately decent bar to go to.
Like 500 bars, then?
No, not that many. I don't think there's that many Phoenix.
Because I did a search. It's always shocking because I did a search how many bars there are in Denver. It was an insane number. It's like,
really?
It's like hundreds. And I was like, because you always think like, you know, okay, I've been to the good 50 bars, and there's probably like another 50, but there's an insane number
of
bars.
No, there's
well, think
12
in our
12
neighborhood
or 15
Baker,
bars that are worth going to.
Really?
And some are attached to restaurants. We have Durant's, which is the Frank and Musso's of Phoenix, which is the best martini in town. We drink there a lot.
Do you do movie deals there?
Actually, they just made a movie about it.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah. With, of all people, who's the, I'm not going to remember. Move on.
Hey, that is a microaggression, sir.
All right.
You did not give me a trigger warning before you did that.
Is this for a trigger warning, Frank? I'm giving you the finger. There you go.
Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna finish these drinks, then we'll call it done.
Fair enough.
Right. We have to finish these anyway. We can't leave here. We don't leave drinks.
Fair enough.
Okay.
A vote santé.
Cilantro.
Okay, so what we haven't we covered? We covered the drinking scene, we covered 100 times.
We talked about drunk monkeys this episode.
That's true.
We mentioned Bukowski, we mentioned...
But I like talking about drunk monkeys. I got one more drunk monkey story.
I would like to hear that.
Okay.
I mean, I bring this up all the time about how that we were drinking and making alcohol before we were human.
Of course.
And this is another example is in Southeast Guinea, in South... America. Villagers tap in the trunks of raffia palms to drain off the sap into plastic containers, and then they let it ferment. And they've been finding that monkeys come all the time down there to just scoop out the booze with leaves and get a little
handy.
So
I think I read this story.
Yeah.
And there's, I read another article too that monkeys have been learned about making, using fermented alcohol for a long time.
Yeah.
It's been like a long part of the history.
Yeah. And
so generally, they're kind of buzzed all the time if they have access to it.
Yeah. And like fruit trees will let them, I mean, I mentioned this before, but there are examples of them actually letting one tree rot a bit before they go and harvest it.
Some smart monkeys.
And then they go and harvest it and get wasted. It's like their harvest party time.
Yeah.
It's a new world monkeys.
We're not so far from that.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And another interesting booze news, they found basically an Egyptian microbrewery in Tel Aviv.
Now, what qualifies it as being
right now I can go there?
No, basically the Egyptians were some of the first people to brew beer, and they found a brewery in Tel Aviv that was Egyptian. So basically showing like how far that they went to actually open. And they aren't sure with the Hittites, and they aren't sure exactly if the Egyptians had Tel Aviv, but they do actually show that there's a brewery there that was an Egyptian brewery.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought they always established that the Egyptians had totally conquered that freaking whole area.
Personally.
No. I mean, there was different empires, of course.
But the fact that they showed that there's beer there, I think, is great.
Yeah, I mean, come on. If you have a good commodity, you're going to export it, actually.
So maybe it was the first chain brewery.
Bennigan's.
First Bennigan's.
Cheesecake Factory.
I always feel weird going in. I get gift cards at Bennigan's and what's the Australian one?
Outback.
And, of course, you have to use those. So we'll go in there. I'll go in there and get like appetizers with my wife.
The then secret we'll, ingredient is salt.
I'll just go to the bar and I'll just try and drink as much as I can off the card.
When I was doing GPS survey work around the country to go and
there
eat,
are you know. Regulars at Outback and Bennigan's.
That's not true.
They're older dudes and they seem very comfortable. They know the bartender's name.
Have you been to the suburbs?
Yeah, the suburbs is they don't have any dive bars there.
Okay.
I see these guys. They seem very relaxed. They're older gentlemen, possibly retired, and they're just sitting there. And they're maybe that's their version of local. Maybe they don't have any local dive bars to go to or any kind of local bar at all. So they're in there drinking at Bennigan's or the Outback and stuff. And I'm looking at them and I'm just like, "All right, whatever. That's all you got. I understand it."
You shouldn't have gone home with that guy.
I didn't actually.
He was pretty.
Why would you assume I did?
Back to the Thai lady boys again. I don't know.
Right.
In a way, back to your story.
Yes.
I don't know what I was talking about.
You were talking about anthropology.
A little bit on the drunk side now.
Oh, the monkeys.
Yes.
The Egyptians.
Egyptians, right.
No, that's Egyptian basically, monkeys. Basically, I thought it was very interesting that they set up an Egyptian
brewery. Why would that surprise you, though?
Well, okay, so it's an empire, right?
Right.
And they set up...
The merchants are going to go out there.
Yeah, and so basically it's like one
not,
of the first...
They weren't like one of the first, idiots back then. They were first, like, you know, hey, we can make some money.
I guess I'm saying it's the first franchise, which I think is really interesting, is they open up a brewery.
I bet there was a lot of franchising going on back then. It's weird. We always think about our ancestors of being a bunch of idiots, but those guys are probably much more clever than we think they are.
Oh, completely, especially trade networks.
No, exactly. I mean, they're probably better at math than we were. I mean, some of those merchant guys are probably like,
they're
probably smarter than the average millennial.
Before they invented zero.
Oh, I'm sure they understood that. I know they try and say that shit was invented,
no zero in the Roman numerals. It's Arabic.
I know because it was understood that
they got that.
No, it was understood that it didn't need to have a zero. I'm sure they understood what nothing meant. I'm sure they were. I mean, it was just understood that you don't have to use a number for it.
But you change from a 9-based mathematics that's complex and hard to do to a 10-based mathematics that's easier to do.
I know, but I'm sure they understood what zero nothing was. I mean, they were not idiots. They built a freaking empire.
Yeah, but it's not just they
built their freaking.
But frankly, it's not just the concept of zero.
It's more they didn't have the concept yet. I think.
Oh no, they understood what zero was. They knew what nothing meant. I'm pretty sure they had a great idea.
I mean,
all the lines gone. What does that mean? I don't know. Fucking what is does that mean? Zero, man. It's fucking gone. I'm sure they had the concept of what nothing meant.
Yeah, but that's not a mathematical concept, friend.
They had the square root of negative one. Oh,
you think they're mathematicians and understand that?
God Jesus. Damn it.
They didn't have that either.
Now we
glass is empty, baby.
We're gonna start.
The jug is empty. What is that?
What do you think that numbers. Means?
The drunkard's walk. I mean, we should. I mean, imaginary numbers are the drunkard's walk. It's true. That's how you. It's a book.
Isn't the drunkard's walk some kind of knitting or?
No, the drunkard's walk is a book by a famous physicist.
No. Before that.
Oh right.
Oh really?
There's a concept called the drunkard's walk. It's a form of knitting or seamstressing or something.
Really, I thought it was just an exercise program where it's two steps forward, one step back, one step aside.
No, there's some
kind
of seamstress thing. It's a
no, really, you're looking up seams.
It means a random. It means a random pattern. It means a random pattern of either knitting or seamstressing or whatever the fuck. It's been around for a long time. It's called the drunkard's walk because the drunkard, you know, drops stitch or something. We've all been there.
Oh, I've did it.
You don't walk in a straight line when you're really fucked up. You kind of
no, you don't.
It's a random.
That's why it's the 0.50 stumble.
When you're in that state, you're like you're kind of stumbling along. It's like you always like stop and say, "What the fuck is wrong with you, man? Just walk down the sidewalk."
I just stop and put
why
my hand
a shoulder into the
hand
tree or something.
Hand against the next nearest building. And go, okay.
Yeah.
I can do this.
Come on, I'm not a fucking retard, man.
And I know that one foot goes in front of the other. And then, you know, and then you work it out.
And then
you
fall down.
You're good for about 4 feet. And then
it just doesn't work out.
And then you find out that gravity's a harsh mistress.
And here's, I'm going to say again, they should replace all sidewalks with like a kind of a comfortable rubberized substance. It can be hard, but also it catches your fall. That makes sense.
Or trampoline.
Are we at that technological point where we can actually, the new neighborhoods they're building, they should replace that with?
Well, Robert Heinlein had the moving sidewalks in his books.
I think that would be horrible.
That should actually be put. That should be put. Well,
no,
yeah,
I mean,
as just going both ways. Yeah, that makes total sense.
No, but if you're drinking and you get on the moving sidewalk, you take one step to the other side, you're just twisted and you fall down. No, I'm against the moving sidewalk movement. I am.
Did you read the history of Boozetown?
Yes, I did.
He was down for that.
Yeah, I know, and I think it's a
you
horrible
just sweep you right to your house.
Right.
No, unless it's a seat, and then you can just...
Yeah, I hear the Explorers Club might be happening?
No, the Explorers Club is definitely happening, man. It's
we get to wear pith helmets. And...
Yeah.
We're talking British.
I have a case of pith helmets in my basement.
You see, Frankie, I was down in deepest, darkest Colfax.
Let me tell you about that.
We were walking up, and we came across this bar. It was just
and that is
full
exactly
of alcohol.
The kind of voice we want for that, because we're going to want people going to the bars and giving kind of a Victorian sort of,
Explorers Club, Frankie. Right. That's what we're talking about.
So there's a spot of buggery, are we? What?
No, it's become like a bar. Depends what bar we go to.
Bar
go
review
to,
site.
Go to Charlie's, yes,
which
you've
never done. But it's going to be from a point of view of being an explorer as opposed to,
fair enough.
It's an average Yelp asshole. What is a review thing? Is it Yelp?
It's a Yelp. I think it's a thing.
Yeah.
What's that computer app?
Well,
you're
on the Twitter and shit.
I'm a tweet. No, I don't tweet.
He's
as
a
much.
Twat.
No. Ever since I had kids, though, I can't tweet as much anymore because it's just screaming kids, man. Try the tweet, get that little genuine moment and 144 characters.
I read your Twitter feed. I'm not.
I know, but
I get
have
on
you
there.
Noticed I don't tweet as much anymore because kids, man, kids, they're fucking. They're loud and
they're
aggressive and they're angry all the time.
Just like drugs. There we go.
Yeah, but change them. I change diapers. They want food. It's like, I'm actually a really conscientious parent. My wife is a hover mother. She's, right on top of them all the time. I'm more of a free range dad.
Free range children. I understand. They taste better. Yes.
Yep. No, I'm trying to give them, some. Which is my way of saying I'm trying not to have to spend every fucking minute, hovering over them, making sure they're not stabbing each other or something. It's ridiculous.
All right.
Let's finish these drinks and let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah, we finished our drinks. You've been talking.
Oh.
Just been talking, Frankie. Talking.
I've been making more.
The lion's share of
2 3 7 50s. That's probably like your second drink, though, Nick.
No,
we did the lion's share of 2 750s.
No, I know. We have definitely been hammering down drinks. He's been like, no, I've been drinking rum since.
You had like a tiny bit of rum.
Are you kidding me? This is my second or third rum.
That's your first rum.
Is that true?
That is not true.
That's your first.
Well,
this is not my first rum. This is like my third. This is my third rum.
I think that's actually accurate.
Yeah. How dare you?
Sir? How dare you? This is an actual outrage.
Can I get you to sue this guy immediately?
With a lovely back rub.
For
libel.
Libel and digression of character.
Digression of character?
Whatever the hell that means.
Not a thing.
No, okay. it could
make
be.
It a thing. But hold on, I digress. Well, I'm just saying.
How dare you digress?
But I digress your character. But I digress
okay,
your character.
Okay, you slandered me, sir. You slandered me, sir. And the evidence, I wish we had a camera in here.
No, you slandered me first, sir. It's
well,
a double slander.
I tend to slander often.
Yeah, it's a double slander here.
But I do it out of goodness.
It's a slander.
No, well, not necessarily so love, but slander. You know, I slander for the right reasons. I think justice.
Well,
it
is true that truth is an entire defense to slander.
Truth and justice, and sometimes love.
God damn it! Why do we have a lawyer?
I slander. Yeah. Are you prepared?
Are you
going to
lawyer up? I got
to
lawyer up.
This is my lawyer. Are you prepared for litigation, sir?
I think they're out of tape.
Yeah.
Listening.
All right. Well, it's been Frank Keller Rich.
Nick Blummer.
Jeff Maritz.
From Modern Drugger Magazine. And we want to thank Cherry Studios for once again for...
Oh, it's been great.
It's been great. It's been no, great. It is. It's been top rate. Here. Thanks again, Gus.
Sure.
You're awesome. We're going to keep
this
in.
Remember, it's only funny if I'm not expecting it.
You asked so much. All right, so we're signing off. And boom.